Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Group Answers podcast show. I am Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt and Brandon Hiltebeitel, and this is episode 80.
80. Big one.
It's a big one. Happy New Year, by the way. Brandon, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Is this a big holiday for you?
Not at all.
How about you, Chris?
I love this whole week between Christmas and January 1st. I mean, I like it's just that. Kind of a time to relax and spend with family, which we're not doing right now. We're hanging out in the studio and kind of resourcing our listeners.
It's just devotion and dedication.
It's just a larger family.
Guys, you don't grow a hit show by hanging out with the family.
You don't take weeks off.
No, that's right. We don't take weeks off here.
No, but Brandon has a big birthday coming up, so this is a big time for you. Now, let me ask you this, because my brother has, his birthday is January 1st, which is awful.
It's
horrible. There's two bad birthday times. Christmas Day and January 1st, but yours is close.
January 6th.
Yeah, because you've already kind of celebrated. Did you have a hard time growing up, people getting excited about your birthday?
No one was excited necessarily, but my mom was very vicious about protecting the sanctity of my birthday. It was awesome. She made sure that things were separated and that I still got to pick my cereal box and all such things.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Mom.
But you're right. You know, in terms of New Year's, I've often thought that it's the most overrated of holidays, but as long as people are going to give me that day off, I'm cool with it. But as I've gotten older, there's something kind of nice about just the idea of the year ending and the year beginning. You know, I was talking to my daughter the other day, and she said it's going to be weird. She's third year in college, and she said, it's going to be weird, you know, getting in the real world, and I don't measure my life by semesters anymore. You guys probably remember that transition.
Yep.
And she said, so how do you measure your life? And she was talking to me, and I said, well, it's kind of seasonal. And this is one of those.
You
this
don't
is
measure
one of those,
anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You don't. Yeah. You just do.
You just stop.
You just do stuff.
Just exist.
I said, that's one of the reasons why the holidays are so much fun for so many people, because it does give you like an anchor or a benchmark. And I think New Year's is one of those good things way.
And it's a refresh time. I'm not a fan of resolutions. I actually just wrote a post for the men's blog, anti-resolution. But I think it does.
Well, what a curmudgeon.
Maybe we should do that as an episode. But, I do think it is a time to kind of think back and think about the year and think about things that have happened and positive things and negative things, and then kind of a refresh, reset for the next year, which is kind of what we're going to be doing, talking about today.
So, you know, everyone's busy. They've got stuff going on for reasons we've already identified. So this show's going to be a little shorter, but in the spirit of, you know, the new year spirit. And this is the time of year, which is really, I actually enjoy all of the, like, 2018 list. And there's countdowns going on, you know, like the year in, music, the year in movies, and just the year in news. So in that spirit, we want to talk about, just in group life, Brandon and Chris, just the so what trends we may have seen in 2018. And Chris, will probably depend mostly on you, because you're out and about so much and you're in all the different churches and in and out of conversations. And Brandon, you are too. And then look forward, just based on that, in 2019, you know, how do we see this culminating? So where are the trends going? What kinds of things do you maybe expect to see? And we won't hold you to it, because we know that no one will come back and listen to this and say, I wonder what Brian and Chris and Brandon said about this year. Were they right? Were they wrong? So, because this could be an evergreen show, right? Or
exactly.
We could be extremely prescient, right?
Yeah.
And get it all right.
Yeah. Well, Kerry Newhoff, I love reading Kerry's blog. He always does what he sees coming for the next year, and it's kind of fun to go back and see what Kerry wrote, and he's pretty good at this. So I think, could be fun to look back at.
So 2018, as you were out and about, what kinds of things did you pick up, you know, just at the macro level and just group life and new practices and trends that maybe you picked up?
One of the things that I picked up that's kind of starting to snowball a little bit, and it's not anything new, I think we've called it different things through the years, you know, mentorship or one-on-one, life-on-life discipleship. But it's this idea of there really needs to be a next step after a small group experience. Now, small groups are great. And we actually talked about this with Jen Wilkin a little bit. And they're kind of making this switch at the village church. But small groups are great for community. You know, if you've got 12, you know, 16 people that meet on a Tuesday night like mine does in my living room, it's great for community. And we do Bible study, but it's difficult for, you know, kind of that next step of discipleship, that accountability piece, that, you know, spiritual disciplines piece. It's just not that easy to do in that format. And so I think what a lot of churches are recognizing is there needs to be a smaller next step for people to kind of dive deeper. And it might be called D groups. A guy that's kind of championed that is Robbie Gallaty, who's a pastor here at Long Hollow Baptist.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, been on several times. Wrote the book Growing Up, which really outlines his vision for that next step, that three or four that get together outside of the group time, same gender, and kind of, you know, hold each other accountable. Talk about spiritual disciplines, go deeper in the Bible, have those deeper conversations that you just can't have when you have a larger group. Now, I'm seeing that as a trend, and one of the mistakes I'm seeing with that next step is expecting everyone to be a part of that type of a group at one time. So I've talked to churches, they're like, okay, we're going to get 100% of our people into D groups or fight clubs. We've talked about fight clubs before, kind of the same concept. And it's not going to happen. Not everybody's ready for that step, nor should they be. If you're truly reaching a broad spectrum of people, there should be people that aren't ready for a community group yet and definitely aren't ready for that smaller kind of D group community.
Right. But I think it's important to talk about the concept at the church level, even if just to set the future expectations. So for me, this is a trend in my life in 2018. I'd been leading small groups, community groups for 16 years. I'd never been in a group like this before. And just a friend of actually a fellow elder at my church about 9 months ago reached out to me and another guy and said, "Hey, I don't feel like I'm as desperate for the Lord as I have been in the past. I want to be a little more focused. Let's the three of us start getting together every Friday morning." We don't even call it anything. We call it Friday morning. And it's been absolutely amazing. But it's a time to we study the word together, and it's definitely a different feel than it is with 12 people. But we also talk about our week, what we struggled with, the thoughts that we're wrestling with. We pray together, and it's so much more intimate, and it's so much more shaping than a group of 12 or like in my group's case, group of 20, 25. So yes, not everybody's going to be in it, but it's super powerful. And so I think talking about it has a big impact because it even if it's just an aspirational thing for others.
Brian, you're in, I think you call yours a fight club, right?
Yeah.
So what does yours look like?
Saturday morning, every other week. We're patterned after Jonathan Dodson's recommendations in gospel-centered discipleship. He was on the show back, I guess it's been a few weeks ago now, maybe in October. And I put it together. I wish there was a resource out there for something like that, but truthfully, I think it probably needs to be a little bit more organic. And I just walk through our starting points, and we start with the text. We go to the theology of the text, like who is God? What conclusions theologically do you draw about who God is based on this text, and then application? So it's just a three-part agenda, and we meet in a coffee shop, public place. It just feels a little better early in the morning, and usually wrap up in about an hour, and it's been great.
I've never done it formally like you guys, but I've seen in my groups as I look back, it happens informally. Because I'll always connect better with, you know, two or three guys in the group, and we just naturally get together outside of the group time. You know, I don't connect in a deep way with everybody in my group, nor should I. But there's just those kind of organic relationships that happen. So if you're thinking about maybe this is something you should do, look for those relationships that are already formed or are forming in your group or even outside of your group that you can naturally just kind of put God into it. You know, put some scripture into it. There's some great resources. The Daily Discipleship Guide that we now offer. Which brands do we offer that in here at Lifeway? It's Explore the Bible, right?
Yeah, Bible Studies for Life.
Bible Studies for Life and the Gospel Project.
All three of them.
All three of them. I know we just added one, so I couldn't remember which one we just added.
For a second, I thought I was going to get the answer wrong.
But they have a component in it that allows you to kind of have more of a formal discussion around, you know, the topic.
And maybe it's a good point of segue, but I would follow up on what you guys are saying about 2018, is that it seemed to be, in terms of group life, a year in transition, that the way churches and leaders are managing and taking a look and examining group life is everything's on the table. And there is, you know, I think Chris and Brandon for years, and not recently, but for years, it was Sunday school, right? And then you had the church growth movement, and you know, there's been a church planning movement. And then I think the economic downturn made buildings more expensive, and churches learned how to do things differently, and so that pushed more groups off campus to get growth. So now we're at a place to where both of those group, you know, those arms of group life are viable, and most churches can do both, and they see the merits of each. And then you've got, you know, this introduction to the third space, you know, that expects a little more out of people. And I saw 2018 as a time when leaders were maybe for the first time seeing these things equally and being open to fresh and very new expressions of groups.
Here's something interesting that I'm seeing with kind of that hybrid model that you're talking about, having Sunday school or on campus and off campus. The churches that are having the most success of that working are the churches that are all off campus but are adding the on campus. I think Village Church is a good example of that. They've recognized that their groups are about community, but they're now adding more of a teaching element with classes on site. And I'm seeing that, you know, some churches call it like university or something like that, but they're adding them on campus. The churches that are struggling a little bit with it are the ones that have been traditionally on campus Sunday school and adding off campus as an alternative or an and or for people to attend. That's a little more difficult.
Yeah, it seems like asking for that initial time segment apart from Sundays is a tougher ask than people that are already giving that time segment apart from the normal, you know, the Sunday rhythm, asking right. them to be a part of a Sunday or on campus. That just seems logical to me.
Yeah, and it's easier to invite somebody to the church building for something than to a home.
Yeah, it is. It's an easier ask, and I think you have to be clear in your vision of what is Sunday school and what is your off-campus groups. Are you asking people to go to both? Do they do different things? Do they do the same thing but in a different way? So, yeah.
All right, we're going to take just a moment, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to look at 2019 and how we see this playing out.
We're partnering right now with the CSB and the Living and Effective podcast. You might want to check it out. What does it mean for God's Word to be effective? Christianity Today and the Christian Standard Bible have partnered together to answer this very question in the Living and Effective podcast. In season one, join the host Richard Clark as he looks for the hidden history of the Bible, wrestles with tough questions, and explores what the future holds for the church. Listen and subscribe to Living Effective wherever you get your podcasts. Living Effective was created in partnership with the CSB, the Christian Standard Bible, a Bible translation that is accurate to the original languages, readable for all reading levels, and meant to be shared with others.
That's great. I think anything Christianity Today does is worth your attention. So 2019, just given what we've just talked about, looking forward, Chris, I think one of the things that we're going to see is this idea of group life. Churches and leaders, it seems like, are warming up to, you know, there was a trend for a season. It was actually a fairly sustained season that you want to ask for less of people, not more. It looks like we've turned the corner, and looking forward, we're feeling more and more comfortable asking more of people that proclaim Christ in their discipleship, and that applies to group life.
I definitely see that. I see that with being intentional on taking people somewhere when it comes to their discipleship. For a long time, it's been, you know, just figure it out. You know, study something, don't study something. You know, as long as you're gathering, that means that discipleship is happening. And I think a lot of churches are discovering, you know, through surveys and just kind of taking a measure of where they are, that that's not necessarily creating disciples. And so church leaders, and I hope this happens more in 2019, are being more intentional with the curriculum choices, with creating a discipleship path for groups to follow. And it doesn't have to be a set, you know, 101 to 201 to 301. In fact, I don't always know that that's the most effective, but it's creating somewhere for them to go so that they can grow in their spiritual lives. They can grow to be more like Christ. And it's not all curriculum, but I think that sets the stage for the conversations that need to happen for discipleship to really take place.
Yeah. And another way that I'm hoping we see a trend, and this is definitely something that some of us here at Lifeway are working on and passionate about, but that plays to that call to be more intentional, call maybe even to give more time than we have in the past around group ministry, group strategy, discipleship, and that's in the area of training. If I could pick one trend for 2019, it would be that more churches in more places would be more committed to training their group leaders to actually be disciple makers. You know, churches I've been on staff at, and we've repented of this, have had the push-play mantra for a group leader, and availability was the only ability you needed. But willingness is not sufficiency, you know? You know, one of the first pastors I worked with, for some reason, he talked all the time about the training that he got to make burgers at Checkers. And he still remembered that there had to be two pickles that didn't touch and one swirl of mustard and two swirls of ketchup and the way that they were supposed to angle it on the paper. If you get more training to build a Checkers burger than you do to lead a group of people who are supposed to be pursuing joy in Jesus together, then we're probably missing something. And I just feel like I feel that in my heart. I see that at my church. And I hear that conversation happen around the building here where we are, of just a hope that there will be more opportunities in churches to build people up to have the doctrinal and practical tools that they need to help somebody pursue that joy in Christ.
If you're not training your leaders, you're setting them up to fail. You might feel like you're just giving them freedom, but if they don't have some training, they're going to have some hard conversations that they're not going to know what to do with, and they're probably going to quit.
Okay. So, I mean, I completely understand. But so, Brandon, like, this is your wish list. So if you had one thing that you saw as a trend, it would be training. So let me hear this, play this out. Also on that wish list, how does that training happen?
So if you're asking ideally, in terms of Chris is certainly more the expert here. So my church, I believe, only does training twice a year. I wish it was more. Sorry, guys, for saying this out loud. I wish it was more like monthly. Even, you know, I'd meet them in the middle at quarterly, but that's a actual gathering. But then I think there's also, you know, sort of weekly resourcing. You know, this is Chris's world, but coaching structure that we've tried before but haven't really gained a lot of traction in, where there's sort of discipling for the disciple makers.
Do you care if it's third party or if it's like video driven, or would you rather it be on the ground coming from inside the bridge?
I'd take which is
Brandon's church.
Yeah, I'd take what I could get. So probably a mix of both.
Yeah, it makes sense. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I see training in two buckets. I see initial training and ongoing training. So every group leader is going to need initial things that they have to know to successfully, you know, lead a group, host a group, facilitate a group. So for me, it's the big five. What are your big five things that you need every new leader to know? So build training around that. Ideally, I think that training is best done in person, although I've done a lot of it, you know, online. You know, you can provide some supplemental initial training online, but really the kind of that classroom experience where we learn from each other, we run through scenarios. I think that's the best way to train a brand new group leader. And I think it's even stickier if that training can be done by a coach, if you have a coaching system. So that starts that relationship through the year. And then, so there's initial training, and then there's ongoing training that Brandon's referring to, that we're not just kind of leaving them out there. Most of what they're going to need, they're going to learn on the job, and they're going to have questions as they lead. So how do we resource them as they go through that? And I always encourage, get creative with that. You know, if you can do some on-campus things where, you know, come during this service, we're going to have a session on how do you deal with difficult people, because we didn't talk about that in the initial training. That's a great way to do it. Do a Facebook Live. You know, you probably have a church Facebook. Say it's 7 o'clock Wednesday night. We're going to talk about this topic. You're going to get to chime in. Yeah. You know, do it creatively so people can do it. Give people opportunities to read books. You know, they're not always going to read them, but just get creative with it. Have ongoing. So have initial training. What's your big five? And then ongoing training throughout the semester to supplement what they're going to need as they actually lead their group.
I mean, Chris, you do a great job. I've been in your training sessions. I've been in your essentials conferences. You know, we do the show together. But my experience is, I hate myself for saying it, a lot of training, it's easy for training to be either ineffective or bad or both.
You can have all three, yeah.
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 And I think a lot of people listening are being like, well, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but
I would lean on, there's a lot of great training that's already out there. I'm actually, this is self-serving, but I'm coming out with a book in May, How to Lead Groups, and I'm going to build training around that book. It won't be available till May, but there's some good resources that you can lean on. I would also encourage you to keep it in small, digestible segments. We have a tendency when we do training, let's do it all day Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
So all 9 to 5, be there. No one wants to do that. I don't want to do that. You know, do a couple of hours. I like to break them into 20 to 30 minute segments, because that's really, you know, science shows that's what our brains can take on at one time. So, you know, just get creative with it and make it easy and digestible for your leaders.
So a couple of other things about 2019, Chris, I like your term about setting the stage, that life group, these off-campus groups, as we've come to know them, have become more, I think the terminology I want to use is they become more instrumental as opposed to intrinsic. Mm. And so the off-campus life group, what we know as community groups or life groups or home groups, wherever they are, they used to be a thing in and to themselves. And the thing on the other side that we espoused was something like biblical community. And like the teaching was on Sunday morning in the sermons, and then groups were more community friendly. Now they've evolved over time, and we've gotten more serious as discipleship has emerged in the conversation. But I think where that disciple making environment seems to be going in 2019 and maybe thereafter is that it is a means to get people into, Brandon, what you're doing on Friday morning,
yeah,
or a fight club or a D group, where you can have more frank conversations. You get it smaller, so there's more time to discuss and work things out, to work out your faith, and asking more time. And the part of that is, you know, we're moving people from community to truth and from study to missionality. Mm-hmm. So we're getting rid of the static element that kind of has become a part of that context. That seems to be something in 2019 that I would expect that trend to continue. Does that make sense?
No, that's good. I think we sell our environments for more than they're actually capable of producing. So, you know, you can set an environment for community, but it's not, you know, it may not produce disciples, or it may not produce the depth of disciples. So kind of, like you said, setting the stage and building that funnel to get people where they need to go.
And that's not an indictment on life groups.
Nope.
Far from it.
No, nope. We need that stage. We need that.
Yeah.
Yep.
It just maybe even gives it more purpose.
Yep.
Guys, it's important to me that we don't gloss over the fact that about 3 minutes ago, in the same monologue, Chris referenced himself as an author and a scientist.
Did I say scientist?
Yeah.
He said scientist.
He said it's science.
Play that back.
No. Go back and listen.
I said read science.
No. It was a clear, I'm an author scientist monologue.
I think that's great.
It's probably accurate. It's, I just want to make sure that we know that Chris, author scientist Surratt, is here on the mic with us right now.
We need new business cards.
Well, since I produce the show and I edit the show, that won't be there by the time this is done. Did you know we're a part of the Lifeway Leadership Network podcast?
Yes, we are a part of the Lifeway Leadership Network, and it is a really cool thing. One of our sister shows is EST, where co-hosts Sam Rayner, Micah Fries, and Josh King introduce us to experienced church leaders who are dealing with the same challenges as most others who lead established churches. In each episode of EST, you will hear solutions to everyday issues church leaders face. So, Brandon, if you're a pastor or leader, Chris, if you're a pastor leader in an established church trying to navigate the complexities of your congregation, you might want to check out EST because this podcast is for you.
What if you're a pastor, leader, slash scientist?
Slash author.
We're the audio version of this podcast, but if you were in the room with us, you would have seen Chris suddenly, after that reference, pull out a clipboard and put on a lab coat, which is very pretentious, I've got to say.
We can't tell if it's his author clothes or his scientist clothes.
And anybody that's watched a car commercial would know that means you're smart.
I do care.
If you're standing there with a clipboard and a lab coat, you are smart. You are smarter than anybody else that might be around.
Smartest member of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Is the clipboard and the lab coat, I know we digress, is that the most effective prompt for making a quick conclusion? What is more effective than that in characterizing somebody?
It's making me feel small, Chris.
I think we need to close the show.
Episode 80, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year, everybody. We've enjoyed 2018 and so looking forward to 2019. This is Brian Daniel for Brandon Hiltebeitel and Chris Surratt. Thanks for joining us.